the rest of the creature's body. The front legs were short and powerful, and the creature stood at a sharp decline, its neckless head nearly touching the sand. As long as maneuverability wasn't an issue, a man riding a Razel could travel a dozen times faster than one on a Tonk. The creatures needed several days' rest to store energy beforehand, but if they were rested, they could run non-stop for nearly 12 hours.
Did you know this is only the second time I've ridden a Razel?
Really? Father had me ride these things all the time. Kick the head, he'd say.
My mother paid 20 lakh for a 10-minute ride when I was a child visiting the fair.
And now you can commandeer as many as you want with barely a whim, thanks to that golden sash you're wearing. Rank does have its privileges.
So I'm learning, Eric, though I'm not happy about it.
Your discomfort comes justly, Rakensha. Your position is built on an offense to the Sandlord.
Oh, are you suggesting that Kenton here has a conscience? That's progress.
Ace shot Eric down with a withering look. They climbed on their mounts, and Kenton gave two taps at the side of the Razel's head with his feet.
Move! Yeah! Yeah!
Wake me when we get there.
Har har. I'd like to see you fall asleep on one of these.
The creatures only knew three speeds: stop, walk, and insane gallop. Part of Arazel's incredible speed came from the fact that it often ignored valleys between dunes, crossing them with powerful leaps. Of course, that speed came at a cost. It was difficult to find a more uncomfortable ride. As his steed sped across the sand, Kenton carefully tapped it with his feet, angling toward the southeast. 2 degrees travel would take a man walking about 4 hours to cross, a third of a day. The Razel would make it in about a fourth of an hour. For the 100th time, Kenton wondered if it had been a good idea to bring Eric with him. Not only did Regent blame Kenton for Eric's disappearance, the Lord General was known to grow livid at the mere mention of his son's name. What would he do when Eric suddenly appeared after 3 years without communication?
Somehow, I suspect that next to Regent, even Ace might look friendly.
That's them, all right. A dozen tents, 2 pavilions. My father always did like to travel with plenty of attendants.
Good. Then perhaps he won't think too much about another person joining.
Have you ever been on a deep sandling hunt before?
Me? Never.
Oh boy, you're in for an interesting time.
Barbarity.
What did you say, Ace?
This is the Sandlord's holy place, Rakensha. Men don't live in the deep sand. It is a place for the Sandlord's grandest creations. It should not be a place for hunting.
Well, I'd nominally agree with our delightful friend here. This is the place where sandlings are found, which means it's the best place for hunting, if that's what you want to do.
Best or most dangerous place in all of Dayside?
You can't have a hunt without prey.
I guess. Come on.
The Lord General's attendants and soldiers took note of the newcomers approaching their encampment.
Who's there? Friend or foe?
Lord Mastrel!
Lord Mastrel? I was not aware that... Is that you, Kenton? Sandlord, take my eyes, it is you, isn't it?
Kenton, did you say? My, but that boy's grown fast.
You're popular.
What did you expect? I had to have someone to spar with once you left. Swords don't train themselves.
So, a sand master, son of the Lord Mastrel, no less, visiting the hall? I bet that went down well.
Sparrings are open to anyone who wants to come.
Yes, but a sand master?
Kenton, I thought the sun had got me when I saw you approaching.
Hey, big head.
What did you call me?
Nothing, Gremt. It's good to see you.
You too.
The soldier who addressed Kenton was of medium height, but was extremely broad of chest. As wide as his body was, however, it still seemed disproportionate to his one other overwhelming feature, his enormous head, on the face of which he wore the broadest smile.
We missed you at the sparrings, Kenton.
Well, Gremt, I was kind of indisposed. You may have heard.
Yes, tragedy. But get down here, let me look at you.
As Kenton dismounted, Gremt called over another soldier to take care of his steed.
Faltry,
Take care of Lord Mastro's mount while he's our visitor.
Yes, sir. Is that you, Kenton?
It is.
Faltry, how are you?
No longer favoring my left. You taught me that. I still have the blasted scar.
You left yourself open. What could I do?
I suppose I had it coming.
I'm glad you made it, lad. You're the only one in the DM that was worth saving. No disrespect, man.
None taken, old friend.
Gremt was one of Regent's generals, the only man in recent history to rise all the way to the rank from the lowly station of footman. As such, he was the only general in the tower who wasn't also a Kelsey or noble. When Kenton had first decided to try sparring at the tower, Grent, as a commoner, had been the only one willing to fence with him. It took a man who had been forced to deal with prejudice all his life to see past Kenton's Sandmaster robes and to the man inside. Once Gremt had accepted him, the rest of the tower, the regular soldiers at least, had been easy.
Now, who have you brought? Is that Sans, boy? You look just like Eric?
Hello, Gremt. How's McCall?
Aisha, it is you!
Last I checked.
Does
the Lord General know? I don't think so. We were told he would be here?
Yes, in the pavilion, but...
Time to show my face.
They walked toward the Lord General's pavilion. Ace trailed along behind, a silent observer. The pavilion was without walls, a shaded area where the Lord General could wait while his men searched out sandlings to fight. A few hundred feet in front of the pavilion, a bright red line of flags marked the loose beginning of the deep sands, the place where water vines could no longer be found.
There they go! Yes!
Regent himself sat on a carapace and cloth chair, watching men in the distance as they ran a herd of tonks across a flat plain of sand. They were bait for the creatures underneath. Kenton wasn't interested in that hunt, however. His quarry was much closer. The Lord General was tall and distinguished, even when he was sitting down. His Lossandan brown hair was speckled with gray, his jaw outlined with a short beard. Instead of Kelsey robes, Regent wore his tower uniform, a tight, long-sleeved tunic with a robe-like skirt underneath. His formal cape, dyed red, marked him as a member of the hall, and his wide, gold-trimmed belt proclaimed him the Lord General.
Lord Regent, you have visitors.
Lord Mastral, you surprised me.
Kenton paused, words frozen on his lips. Annoyance he had expected, anger projected, but acceptance? He immediately became suspicious.
What was it Chris said? That I needed to be more diplomatic? I realize you came here to enjoy yourself. I apologize for interrupting your vacation time.
I appreciate the sentiment. Please, take a seat.
Thank you, Lord General.
Kenton complied. Eric, however, remained standing, something he obviously intended to do until his father addressed him. Regent, however, turned away from Eric, looking at Kenton instead.
The deep sand is quite a trip from Lossand, Lord Mastral. I am impressed by your dedication in finding me.
Thank you, Lord General.
How are things in Khazar?
Well, my lord.
You see out there? Already we've made several catches.
My congratulations.
Oh, this promises to be a fruitful hunt. Have you ever watched a deep sand hunt before?
No, my lord.
You must rectify that. It's an experience unlike any other.
I'm sure it is. However...
But you've traveled a long way. And by what?
Razel.
Ah, it's a tiresome journey. Wearying, unless you're used to it.
A necessity under the circumstances. I wanted to see you as quickly as was possible.
Long journeys and never seen a deep sand hunt before. Lord Mastral, I'll get you a drink. It's the very least I can do for Fella Taisha.
Thank you, my lord.
Are you still sparring with the tower's soldiers, or have you grown out of that?
I've always found their training helpful. A wise man makes certain he's never trapped in battle with only a single option of attack.
Oh, a true statement, Lord Kenton. Additional skills can be of much service to a man, especially when he finds himself in need of changing professions.
Actually, Lord Regent, that is why I came to find...
Greyhound!
Regent looked up with interest, squinting out across the sands. One of his men stood atop a dune, waving a red flag.
Look there! They found something! Attendant! Get me my hammer!
Yes, sir.
But Lord Mastro, we should continue this discussion. Would you care to join me?
I don't think...
You came all this way. You might as well see what a hunt is all about.
All right, my lord.
Splendid!
The attendant rushed back, bringing with him a massive steel hammer. Regent accepted it.
You! Prepare two steeds. The Lord Mastro will be joining us.
Yes, sir.
Kenton shot a look at Eric, but his friend had finally turned away, walking toward the back of the tent, his face unreadable. Kenton looked back at Regent. He wasn't certain what the Lord General was offering, but he doubted he could afford to miss the opportunity.
Your mounts are ready, my lord.
Thank you. Lord Mastrel, if you would follow me.
They exited the pavilion, and Kenton was introduced to a Turha, the favored sandling of warriors. The creatures were large, a few feet taller than a Tonk, with enormous trunk-like legs. The legs were like pillars, the shoulders rising about a handspan above the Turha's squarish body. The head had two spikes extending forward from each side, and the entire body was covered with carapace plates, several times thicker than those of a Tonk.
And up! Lord Mastrel, do you require assistance?
I've never ridden a Turha before, my lord.
Oh, trust me, they're tough. From infancy, we douse their bodies with docal, making the shell impossible to dissolve.
Kenton caught Ace's eye as he tentatively climbed atop the beast. The Kurstian was not pleased with this turn of events. Of course, when was she?
Are you joining us, Ace?
My task is to protect you from assailants, Rykensha. Not from breaking your own full neck where no man should tread.
Of course. Silly me.
The Turha bore Kenton with apparent lack of interest. Kenton's weight barely seemed to make a difference to it.
You can use the Tonk hammer if you wish. There should be one hanging from the saddle there.
I see it. Thank you.
Most of my men control their mounts by means of metal knee plates, of course, which they tap against their Turha's sides. Perhaps if you have time, you could train that way.
I suspect my duties as Lord Mastrel will preclude my having much free time.
Ah, true. For now, anyway.
The Lord General tapped his Turha forward, and Kenton followed with a quick hammer. The beast moved smoothly, its post-like legs rising and falling with an even gait. The Turha moved much more quickly than a Tonk, though they weren't as fast as a Razel. Of course, few things were. They left the tent complex, heading toward the red flag in the distance.
Your companion, the Tract, is very uptight.
I'd noticed.
Why is she here?
Lady Judge Helis prescribed her for my protection.
How thoughtful. Have you ever been to Deep Sand before, Lord Mastrel?
Yes, my lord.
You surprise me. Then you know what to expect.
I wouldn't say that, Lord Regent. My experiences were brief at best. I've been near Deep Sand several times, but have never actually stood upon it.
Then I shall warn you, it isn't what you think it is.
What do you mean?
The stories aren't exactly accurate when it comes to deep sandlings.
You mean deep sandlings aren't as large as people think?
Oh, they're big, but... Well, you'll see. Let's just say that with the vines gone, sandlings are allowed to grow, just not always in the way everyone assumes.
You mean Dorim vines?
Yes, they have no predators out here. They dictate the environment because they're free to dominate it. Since the vines crisscrossed every 10 feet or so, sandlings can't grow very large because their movements would snap the vines and release their water. It's deadly to sandlings. Such a move would be suicide. So, most sandlings in the Kerla can't grow much bigger than 4 or 5 feet long unless they're a surface-dwelling race, like the Tongs. But deep sand is different. Dorim vines require a few hours of basking in sunlight each day to survive. Though, like most dayside plants, they must retreat beneath the sands for the rest of the day, or they dry out. However, the vines also have to have a source of water, and that source is far beneath the surface. Thus, the vines have to stretch a long way from that source to reach the sunlight. Vines simply could not survive in areas where this distance is too great.
Deep sand.
Precisely. It's there that sandlings can grow to unchecked sizes.
Kenton watched the marking flag approach, both intrigued and apprehensive. They crested the hill, following a path marked by hundreds of footprints. Regent soldiers probably ran a herd of tongs over the path frequently to make certain nothing was hiding underneath. In the Kurla, one rarely saw sandlings larger than tiny bugs. Human populations had domesticated most of the surface-dwelling sandlings and hunted the underground predators. A few minutes after passing into the deep sands, however, Kenton began to notice life. It wasn't difficult, for the signs were plentiful. In fact, he could pick out several places where sandlings must be hiding. As they got closer, he could see areas where the sand churned with motion, often showing flashes of carapace and shiny black legs. Enormous patches would seem to boil, indications of the huge creatures that were hiding below.
What is that over there?
I warned you, Lord Mastril.
They're everywhere.
Yes, they are.
Then why don't they attack?
When people visit the deep sands, they see the sand agitate around them, remember the stories, and assume they're going to be attacked. So they run. But watch.
Regent grabbed a spear from a sheath on the back of his mount, took aim, and threw it directly into the middle of a churning spot a short distance away. Where it landed, the pocket of movement broke apart, scattering in all directions.
Oh, people never realize that what they're seeing isn't a single monster, but thousands of tiny ones.
Aisha, then they're not individuals, they're groups. But they can't all be this small.
Oh, they aren't. There are some big ones to be found, otherwise I wouldn't be here. But they're far more rare than people assume, especially the dangerous ones. Even schools of sandlings that large can only support a limited number of predators.
As they spoke, Kenton saw the sandlings regroup around Regent's spear. It shook slightly as several unseen bodies took bites at it to see if it was food.
They come to the surface to feed, don't they? That's why there are so many of them. The sand goes down for hundreds and hundreds of feet, but the food is at the surface. Or at least food that isn't of the sandlings.
Kenton looked closely, searching for signs of digested sand. Most of the smaller sandlings were herbivores that grazed on sand. Sand that passed through a sandling's body changed from dusty bone white to a more crystalline clear color. The whiteness soon returned as the sand recharged in the sun. Kenton had never understood the difference between a sandling eating sand, which turned it clear, and pouring water on the sand, which turned it black. Here there were plenty of patches of digested sand, far more than he had ever seen in the Kurla.
Now those over there are what you have to watch for. Do you see?
The Lord General was pointing toward what appeared to be an ordinary patch of sand. When Kenton looked closer, he saw a small triangular piece of carapace was sticking out of the ground.
What is it?
Delrock Nysha, the most feared of all deep sandlings. Don't worry, they're not hunters. In fact, they're harmless so long as you don't step on one. But if you do...
He took another spear and threw it toward the Delrock Nysha. The spear hit, and immediately the sand burst apart, 3 10-foot-long claws snapping closed.
Aisha!
The end result was what looked like a warped pyramid standing on the sand. The carapace claws, or actually they were more like legs, fit together almost exactly, closing the spear inside of them. Slowly, however, the legs unfolded, revealing a small square head on a long spindly neck. Apparently the head rested at the base of the legs, where it could tear at its prey while the limbs held it trapped.
See? It's mad for missing the meal.
It's fascinating, my lord.
That it is. But I presume you didn't come to discuss sandlings, but rather to discuss business.
So, make your demands, Lord Mastral.
Demands? I don't believe I'm in a position to make demands.
Oh, that's rich. Don't play with me, Lord Mastral. I know what you want. Tell me, what has Revan offered you?
You refer to the King of Sivas?
Yes. Your move surprised me, but I acknowledge its brilliance. We hoped to take care of the Mastrals before any of the other countries knew what we were doing and might try to influence you. The rest of the city didn't even know about our plans to dissolve the Diem. But your 2-week stay of execution has ruined that. So tell me, Lord Mastral, how much will it cost me to hire you?
You want to hire the Sandmasters?
Well, not all of you, of course. That would defeat the purpose of destroying the Diem. Just enough that everyone knows the tower has the power of sand mastery. Trust me, I will pay you more than Revan's purse or any other of the Rim Kingdoms.
You work to destroy us because we've grown too powerful. Then you seek to seize that power for yourself?
All politics is founded in hypocrisy, Kenton. Do not let our personal differences destroy your chances. Our arrangement would be of mutual benefit.
The reports you heard of Mastral's dealing with the Rim Kingdoms involved another Sandmaster, not myself. And I hate to ruin a theory, Regent, but I intend to save the Diem.
Nonsense! Surely you're not such a fool.
I'm afraid I am.
Then this entire conversation has been a waste.
Not a waste, Regent. It's proven that we can get along if we want to. We don't need to be enemies.
I've never tried to hide the fact that I don't like you, boy. You're too impetuous, too insubordinate. Now you throw away perhaps the best deal your miserable profession is going to receive. I don't see any grounds for agreement there.
Surely we can come to some arrangement.
I already offered you one. Boy, the Sandmasters have outlived their usefulness. Either you join me, or you lose yourselves completely.
Regent, you say that Sandmastery has outlived its usefulness, but at the same time, you scheme to make it your own. You know its power, and you're afraid of it. All you want is what's best for yourself, not Lysand.
How dare you! I care nothing for Sandmastery's power. It has none. The DM's only influence comes from ignorance. It has convinced the people that it is some source of mystical omnipotence. What would they think if they knew what Sandmastery really was, hmm?
Which is?
Practically nothing. What good is the ability to jump a little bit? You can throw sand at people, but what good is that in battle? Perhaps you could blind a man for a few seconds, hmm? The people and their stupid Kirstian priests fear you, but you are really no better than street charlatans.
You sound afraid.
Ha! Nonsense.
You say Sandmastery is no good, Regent, but you don't mean it. Otherwise, you wouldn't be so eager to bring me under your control.
I want your prestige, boy. Your name. Your power might be useless, but your reputation is not.
But you admit our influence. Wouldn't it be of more use to you as a profession? You tried to destroy us instead of helping us. You should be more concerned with the future. An allegiance with the DM in our time of need wouldn't be quickly forgotten.
I found that Sandmasters have incredibly short memories, boy.
But we can...
Enough! I have no more time for this. I've changed my mind. I would sooner see you destroyed than have you anywhere near the tower. Good day. Yeah!
Suddenly, Regent's mount moved into a gallop.
I'm gonna have to come up with better arguments.
Angrily, Kenton hammered at his own mount, trying to get it to move more quickly. Unfortunately, it appeared as if the creature only responded to some hammer commands. It refused to move more quickly.
Move, you stupid beast! Move! That way! I should have got the knee plates.
As Regent disappeared from view, Kenton slowed his own beast, stopping it atop a dune.
Let's head back to camp. Maybe Lord Regent will be in a better mood after he's had his hunt. okay with you down there?
The Turha did not respond. It just sniffed at the air, scenting something on the breeze. At that moment, Kenton noticed several men standing atop the next dune looking down at something. Soldiers, under Regent command. Curious, Kenton hammered his Turha forward.
Gee up!
As he crested the final dune, he finally caught sight of the creature Regent had been summoned to fight.
Karaka's down, my lord, but there's still life in it.
Not for much longer, huh? Let's see what the ugly brute makes of me.
It lay in a wide valley at the base of two gradually sloped dunes, surrounded by a dozen apprehensive soldiers. It was fairly large, perhaps 10 feet long, with two massive flat tails sprouting from its hindquarters. It represented a large tongue. It had four legs, each one massive as a tree trunk, and a neck equally as wide, but much longer than the tongue's. Its head looked like two enormous arrowheads placed one on top of the other, the edges of each razor sharp.
Take care, my lord. It's still...
Don't tell me to take care. I was hunting Karak before you were a smudge in your mother's belly.
Kenton's stomach churned as he saw it. The creature lay on its side, its carapace cracked and splintered from dozens of Warhammer strikes. Even from a distance, Kenton could hear its blood gas hissing from its wounds, and its legs were moving feebly as it tried to rise.
Here we are, Lord Regent's prize, a Karak, if I'm not mistaken. His men have taunted and toyed with it, left it wounded and helpless so that Lord Regent may strike the killing blow.
Yes! Yes! Fine specimen.
The Lord General was getting too old to hunt himself, but he still wanted the prestige of the final blow. The Karak dropped to the sand, motionless.
A proud sandman, proud to die.
He'll do the same to the DM. Our enemies have weakened us to the point near death, and now Regent will take the prestige of the final blow. The decision will be a historic one. The seven residing Taisha will be remembered as those who destroyed Sand Mastery. Unless I find a way to change their minds.
Kenton turned his mount, hammering it to follow the path back toward the camp this time. He hadn't even thought of the implications before. Most Taisha were easily forgotten. Because there were eight of them, none of them dominant, it was difficult for any Taisha to distinguish himself. This entire council, however, would be famous for centuries to come.
All it will cost them is Sand Mastery.
As he rode back, he realized something was bothering him. Something other than his conflict with Regent. It was a totally random topic, but he couldn't shake it for some reason. Something from one of the books he had studied. He frowned when he realized what it was. Something had been wrong with the Karak. The creature had been too small. Its shape fit the description he had read. The pair of flat tails were a giveaway. But the size was wrong. Far too small. Almost as if it were...
a child. Oh, Aisha! No, no, no!
Kenton looked back at the noise. Even from several dunes away, he could see the dark form rising into the sky. A very angry form with an arrowhead-shaped skull atop its large neck. An instant later... a soldier came sailing through the air, crashing down a dozen paces from where Kenton and his steed trudged.
Aisha!
Kenton leapt from his mount, hurrying to check the fallen soldier's pulse.
What happened? Are you...
the beast was a baby.
I know.
Now, mommy is here.
Kenton turned, moving as fast as he could across the sands, back to where the hunting party had pinned down the Karak.
Lord Regent! Lord Regent!
Kenton dashed over the top of the dune, calling his sand to life with a flash of light. Beyond, he saw a sandling so enormous it made the creature at the end of the Mastral's path look tiny. With legs large as buildings and a triangular head that could have swallowed 10 men whole, its body rose like a mountain out of the sand. Each step threw up a ripple of sand, scattering warriors holding tiny hammers. At least a dozen soldiers lay half buried by the wave of sand that the creature's emergence had produced. Regent was one of those half buried. Even as Kenton watched, the Lord General tried to pull himself free of the dune that buried his lower half. His motions became more frantic as one of the creature's feet lifted, moving toward him.
Help me! Help me! An instant promotion for any soldier who gets me out of here!
Elsewhere, back at the tower camp, Eric was wrestling with his favorite enemy, his conscience.
You're a fool, Eric. A fool. What were you thinking he would do? Welcome you back with open arms? Well, no, he ignored you. That's perfect. Neither of you have to deal with each other. Why are you so worried? He disowned you. Your ties are cut. You can go back to Darkseid guilt-free and never have to even think of him again. What were you even thinking coming back? You hate it over here. So bright, so hot and sticky. What a fool. You should...
What are you doing?
Eric looked up with surprise. Ace stood a short distance away, watching him.
Were you talking to yourself?
Of course not. Why? Were you listening?
Of course not. If you were not talking to yourself, how could I listen?
Fine. Then we understand one another.
Ace looked at Eric as he strode away. Did he realize that he had saved her life earlier, down at the docks, when Lachlan had tried to kill her? Why had he not mentioned it since?
Blasted woman should be shadowing Kenton anyway. There's a point. Where is Kenton? I thought he was smart. How long does it take to realize my father's only toying with him? That's what he does.
Eric squinted, looking across the sands in the direction his friend had gone.
This entire trip was an absolute waste of time. Wait a minute. Ace, did you hear something?
What did you say?
Nothing. Thought I heard... Doesn't matter. I'll go check.
Ace watched Eric disappear behind Lord Regent's pavilion.
You are a very peculiar man.
Help me!
I don't need your promotion. I need an ally in the Taisha.
Kenton jumped into action. Adrenaline and sand boosting his leap off the dune, propelling toward the battle at a horrific rate. He had to get close enough to grab Regent with his sand. Kenton landed beside a couple of soldiers who were scrambling away, dragging a wounded comrade. Kenton leapt again, spinning through the air toward the creature itself. One of the beast's tails whipped through the air toward him, and Kenton pushed himself higher in the air to flip over the tail. At least 50 feet in the air now, Kenton let himself fall. The Karak's second tail whipping over his head, the speed of its motion carrying so much wind in its wake that it created a miniature sandstorm. Kenton blinked his eyes clear as he plummeted toward the ground. Still reeling, he began to slow his descent, but then he located Regent. The creature's foot was about to crush him.
In the name of all the generals!
Kenton shot his sand away from himself, hurling it toward the Lord General at a speed no other Mastral could ever have obtained.
Regent! Hold on to the ribbon!
The sand flew like a spear, slamming into Regent and grabbing him in its grip and ripping him free of the dune. Just as the Karak's leg flattened the sand, Kenton slammed into the ground. The impact making his vision flash with pain, and he involuntarily lost control of his sand. He shook his head, trying to regain his breath. Regent, no longer held by sand, dropped through the air, crashing to the sand about 20 feet away. The Lord General moved limply, his leg twisted at an unnatural angle.
Somebody help me. Please. Somebody.
Kenton tried to stand, but collapsed back to the sand.
Lord Mastral! Kenton, is that you? Aisha, boy! Get up and get us out of here, or we'll both be...
The massive sandling was looking at them both, its head lowered slightly, dark black eye spots focused directly on Kenton. Though the carapace was incapable of showing emotion, Kenton almost felt like he saw an expression on its inhuman face. Anger, intelligent, vengeful anger. The Karak lifted its tails, moving to whip them toward Kenton and the Lord General.
I can't do it. I don't think I can lift us both safely, Lord Regent. We'll have to run.
No! My leg! I think it's broken! I can't...
Yeah!
Suddenly, a black form fell from the sky, crashing to the sand beside Regent. A black triangular form with tall, powerful hind legs and a small forefeet, a Razel. Eric tumbled from the Razel's back, grabbing his father, and throwing the still-moving form over his shoulder.
You look like you could use a ride, father!
Eric? I didn't think you'd follow us.
Though he looked a little plump, Eric moved with the speed and reflexes of one trained for battle, quickly jumping back on the Razel and grabbing hold of its saddle.
Kenton's my friend, and he's apt to get in trouble if I leave his side for too long.
Now,
hang on! Yeah!
He shot Kenton a nod before snapping his foot against the Razel's head, sending the creature into a wild leap to the side. The Razel's hindquarters pushed off, shooting Eric and Regent high into the air, narrowly missing a monstrous tail. Kenton mimicked the Razel's actions, using his sand to propel himself to the side.
Get back!
Kenton rolled to the side, the tail hitting the sand just a few feet behind him.
Right then. Just me and Mommy, is it? Fine!
Kenton gathered his sand around him, realization dawning.
I've spent so much of the last few weeks fighting things that are Turkin and cannot be wounded. Curtsian assassins, that creature on the Mastral's path, that I'd begun to forget what it's like to fight a foe that can actually be hurt.
He launched himself into the air as the Karak lifted its tail for another swing. Kenton landed on the tail itself, then ran along the length of the tail, his sand steadying him on both sides. The creature turned toward him, its arrow-like head focusing on him. Kenton sprang again, putting all his might behind the leap, hurling himself upwards. He shot through the air, wind rippling his robes, his hands clenched in fists before him. He brought his hands apart, moving the sand away from his jump, moving it up to his sides instead. A ribbon surrounded each of his hands. As he flew toward the Karak's head, he thrust his hands out, commanding the sand forward, driving a brilliant line directly at each of the creature's eye spots.
Here's sand in your eye!
The monster's head snapped backward as the sand smashed through its carapace. Violent sprays of gas blood spewed from the eye spots.
Yeah,
As Kenton began to fall, he gathered all three of his ribbons into one powerful disc beside his right hand. He swept his arm in an arc, spraying his sand out like a massive scythe, slicing through the creature's exposed neck. Gas blood ruptured from the wound, exploding outward so violently that it blew the Karak's 20-foot-wide head completely from its body. Kenton spun as he dropped, landing lightly on the sand. The Karak crashed to the ground behind him, while its head slammed to the ground just to his right. 24 warriors crouched, spread across the sand before him, most of them wounded, some clutching ineffectual spears or hammers. All of them had stunned expressions on their faces.
What did I just see?
Kenton walked forward, approaching Regent, who sat beside Eric's mount. Kenton strode right up to the Lord General, leaned down until his face was just a few inches from Regent's.
Incredible!
And I'm considered one of the weak ones.
Lord Regent's hunting party returned to camp traumatized, wounded, and with their numbers less than when they had set out. Regent had to be carried, for his right leg was indeed broken. As well as the broken leg, the right side of his face was red and quickly showing signs of bruising. But he was alive, which was more than could be said of almost a dozen of his men. As a guild healer inspected his leg in the pavilion, Regent shot a scowl at Eric, who stood with Kenton at the edge of the tent.
It's a nasty break, Lord General. You'll need to rest for at least 6 weeks.
Thank you, healer. I should have known this day would go wrong the moment you appeared, Eric, my boy.
The thanks I get.
Stop whining, Regent. You're behaving like a spoiled child.
And you, happy to see me wounded, boy? You were just waiting for something like this to happen, I'm sure.
Perhaps. You implied that Sand Mastery was useless. I think you now have ample evidence otherwise.
Your help wasn't requested.
You called for help.
Not yours.
You didn't specify that. And if I hadn't been there today, more than 12 of your men would have died, and you'd have been among them.
Fine, fine. Go ahead, Sandmaster. Gloat.
This isn't gloating. Sands, man, your head is as thick as a carapace.
By the Sand Lord, you're like your father. He was the only one who ever had the nerve to speak to me like that. Good for you.
I could see that if something like this happens again, you are prepared. I could assign 24 Sandmasters delivered to you the moment the DM is reinstated. They will be yours to do with as you please. Take them on hunts, use them to bolster your defenses. Sands, you can have them move furniture for all I care. They'd be yours to command as you see fit.
I'm waiting for the catch.
You wanted Sand Mastery's prestige, but I'm offering you something far better. Access to the true power of the DM. That, plus the vow that the Sand Masters will no longer take what does not belong to them. In exchange for your vote.
What kind of Sand Masters? I don't want you just sending me all your rejects.
At least one Mastral with supporting members, one of each rank.
All right, then. Done.
Thank you. I'm admittedly a little surprised, but thank you.
Boy, I just saw you cut the head off a 70-foot-tall monster. I don't care what I have to do. That isn't the kind of power we can afford to cut free. As long as there is a DM profession, there will be rules to bind you. It occurs to me that maybe the DM was always intended to keep the Sand Masters in check.
Perhaps it was. But I've taken up enough of your time, so now I shall bid you good day, Lord General. I hope your recovery is quick. Ace, Eric, are you coming?
Wait, have you boys eaten? My cooks will be fixing dinner shortly, and you are welcome to stay.
Kenton shot Eric a look.
I can always eat after saving any man's life.
Then we would appreciate it, Lord General.
Hours later, the Lord General's pavilion seemed to come alive with the sounds of eating, drinking, and the camaraderie that accompanied it. Kenton was relieved to find that Regent and Eric seemed to have found some common ground, even if their bonhomie might have been enhanced by a combination of pain medication and alcohol.
I told you all I should have known this day would go badly when this wayward son of mine materialized.
And then I went and saved your life. I am incorrigible.
You always were, Eric. Cheers.
Excuse me.
Is everything okay, Kenton?
Just need a little fresh air, Big Head.
Show some respect. It's General Big Head to you, Lord Mastral.
General Big Head, then.
Kenton strolled along the sands in front of Regent's tents, smiling to himself. He was pleased to see Eric and his father getting along in their own way. It was a good sign. Eric had lived with the man for 15 years, never once voicing his frustrations with his father. They would probably never get along well, but at least they were talking.
Fathers and sons. Who can explain them?
What kind of man was his father, anyway? He had sent his family away, as was demanded of him, forcing them to live in town. But at the same time, he had broken tradition by marrying a woman from Darkside. The other Sandmasters said it had ruined all of Praxton's children.
But Mother loved me.
She always spoke highly of the Lord Mastral, his father, and was always the dutiful wife when she visited. But she was a Darksider, with a nice house in Khazar's Kelsey district, as much money as she could want, and plenty of time to raise them. Maybe she felt trapped. Maybe she wished she could have stayed with his father.
I think it's time to break with tradition and let families into the DM. Years ago, my father broke with tradition when he married a woman from Darkside. Perhaps if the DM had been open to the idea of families, it might have been less hostile to their union. That's why the DM has to change. So that can never happen again.
Kenton looked up. Lost in his thoughts, he had wandered far from the camp. If he wasn't careful, he would find himself wandering onto deep sand. The red marker flags were just a few feet in front of him. Then, a sudden stillness seemed to flow across the sand. Kenton felt an irrational chill blow over him. Even the sun seemed to grow darker for a brief moment. Slowly he turned, and there, atop the dune ridge, was a woman standing just behind him. The woman wore some kind of wrap outfit that kept the sand from blasting against her flesh. Her clothing was light tan in color, an almost perfect match for the environment around her. Only her hair flowed free, dark as a Kelsey's wine cellar, catching in the wind.
Who?
But he already knew. She carried a carapace spear lightly in her dark olive fingers, her forehead scarred with a stark white square. Two newer scars stood out beside the square. Assassin marks. They stood staring at each other for a moment. This one was different than the ones the day before, he realized. She hadn't attacked from behind. She was calm, careful. She bowed her head once toward Kenton before snapping into motion. Kenton ducked to the side, dodging the spear as it shot through the air. He knew somehow that the spear would be covered with a Turkin coating. Kenton called his sand to life anyway, then reached down for his sword. The assassin moved quickly after her throw, however, tackling Kenton a second later. Kenton's sword spun from his unprepared fingers, tumbling down the side of the dune. He and the assassin rolled with it. Kenton kicked free of the Kirstian as the woman pulled a carapace knife out of the sheath on her leg. Kenton rose to his feet, his heart pounding. Gathering his sand around himself, he jumped, soaring high into the air.
What was it Ace said? That those loyal to the Akkar would keep sending assassins until...
Sure!
What the...
She slapped her hand through Kenton's stream of sand, destroying the foundation of Kenton's jump. Kenton toppled back toward the ground. He tried to get his remaining sand to slow him. But the Kirstian once again threw herself into the stream, killing it.
Incredible. She's greased herself in Turkin oil, sufficient to negate my sand.
Kenton tumbled to the sand on the other side of the dune, rolling away from the camp, down the slope where no one would be able to see him. The Kirstian followed, diving toward Kenton. Kenton barely managed to get his hands up in time to catch the knife hand before it plunged into his chest. Kenton was struggling, barely holding the knife at bay. As long as the woman grappled Kenton, she could keep control of the battle, and Kenton's sand mastery would be practically useless. Desperately, Kenton tried to use his sand. He touched his elbow to the ground, summoning another ribbon before applying it to lift both him and his assailant into the air. However, Kenton didn't have enough strength to lift two people very high, and the Kirstian quickly maneuvered a leg free and kicked at the stream, the gelled carapace on her skin killing the sand and toppling them both back down to the ground. They rolled between the dunes, struggling for control of the knife. However, it was obvious who was more skilled in this form of combat. Before Kenton knew it, he was back in the same position as before, his back resting against the sand floor, the Kirstian on top of him, the knife inching toward his face.
Sans, she's strong, and I'm not used to controlling three ribbons like this. I'm burning up with dehydration.
You're finished, Rikensha!
Kenton turned his head to the side as the tip of the knife touched his nose. He barely managed to call the sand to life. He wouldn't have the strength to lift them both into the air again. Then he saw it. A short distance away, a small beak of carapace jutted from the sand. Sand that was still and quiet. Kenton shoved his weight up and to the side, rolling the pair of them to the right. The move let the Kirstian's knife slip forward, and it sliced the side of Kenton's cheek.
Lord Ragen said the Delraikin are harmless until you step on one.
The roll ended with Kenton on top. With a final shove of strength, he slammed the Kirstian's shoulders down on the black speck.
Get off me!
The sand began to rise around them, three massive triangular claws bursting out of the sand. Kenton used his sand to blast himself into the air.
No, no, no!
The Kirstian held onto her clothing with a desperate grip. The Delrock Nysha's claws continued to swing closed, rising below Kenton, spraying sand into the air. Kenton caught one look of surprise on the assassin's face before the claws snapped shut, crushing the Kirstian and catching the lip of Kenton's robes. As he spun free, Kenton's robes tore as he flipped backward in an arc, landing on the dune behind him. The Delroc shuddered suddenly, shaking violently. Then it stopped moving. Its three legs opened limply, a bloodied corpse slipping free. The Sandling did not move again. It had been killed by the blood of its intended meal.
Aisha, I have to get away. Need to rehydrate before I collapse.
Sometime later, Kenton arrived back at Lord Ragent's camp.
Kenton, we were looking for you. Hey, what happened?
Bumped into a new friend.
Well, you look terrible.
She tried to kill me.
Ah, that kind of friend.
Kenton, you need a drink. Here, it's water.
Thank you, Gremt.
Rykensha, did you just say that someone tried to kill you?
Yes, Ace.
Where?
That way, behind the dune.
I'll deal with this.
No. There's no need.
Eric shot an uncertain look at Kenton. He seemed almost fearful.
She was Turrican. Smeared herself with oil. But she met with the Delroc Nysha.
Nasty. What was left?
Both of them died. The Delroc couldn't absorb the moisture in her blood.
Great Sand Lord. Question is, how did an assassin find you out here?
I figure they must have somebody watching the Diem.
And where were you, Ace? I thought you were my friend's bodyguard.
If it was the Sand Lord's will, I would have been there.
Just cannot argue with that logic. It's mind-blowing. Best we get you back home. You're a liability out here.
As they rode away from the camp on their Razaline, and having said their goodbyes to the people they knew, Kenton returned to the topic of the attempted assassination, which was still uppermost in his thoughts.
To track someone across the Kurla like that, just imagine the determination.
Your enemies are nothing if not ambitious.
There is one thing, however. It looks like our track was right about the timing. The assassin waited until 12th hour passed, officially putting us into the next day before she attacked.
Hardly reassuring, unless you prefer waiting to be killed.
Not really. But I see you also made it out alive. Your father didn't kill you, at least.
No.
How is he, Eric?
He'll live, I guess.
I mean, what does he think of you?
Honestly, I don't know what I expected. He's still angry with me. He probably always will be. He still won't accept the idea that I'm not going to become Lord General after him. He even tried to give me a sword.
Kenton glanced down. He still hadn't asked his friend about the conspicuous absence at his side. Eric had never gone unarmed. Never.
He probably noticed you don't carry one these days.
Eric said nothing in response, and Kenton sensed he should drop the subject entirely. They returned to the DM at just past fifth hour, by which time most of the DM members would have awakened.
It's okay, I've got you. Riding a raise will take some getting used to.
No need to tell me that. I have aches in places I didn't know I could feel.
Ask yourself, where is he now? I'll tell you where he is. Out making plans for himself. Plans to keep himself safe.
Who is that?
Who do you think?
Dryl.
We need to do the same. In a little over a week, the DM will be no more. What will we do then? Where will we go? Who will protect us?
You should say something.
I should. I'm just wondering how many more battles I have to fight today. Couldn't I just skip one?
I've made plans for us already. I have promises. Promises of wealth and protection.
Come on. Dryl's all bluster.
You're right. This has to stop. And I know there's one way that we'll do it. A way to make Dryl stop spreading chaos. Dryl! You are in violation of my express orders.
Lord Mastral, welcome back.
Enough, Dryl. The DM has suffered enough of your paranoia.
Oh?
And how does the DM intend to stop it?
You and I obviously have a problem.
Obviously.
Then we need to settle it.
I don't see how.
There was a way once. Many years ago, our conference area was called by another name.
The Pit! You can't be serious.
I've tried everything else. You've left me no choice.
I'll cut you apart in seconds. We both know it.
If you do, then I suppose I don't deserve to be Lord Mastrel, do I?
Kenton, what are you doing?
Stay out of this, Aloran.
You should listen to him.
No. Dryal of the DM, I challenge you to combat one-on-one in the dueling pit.
You're a fool.
What is your reply?
When do we do it? Now?
No. I'm making the challenge. I pick the time.
When then?
10 days. Right after the council passes judgment on the DM.
Why wait?
Because, Dryal, I am going to save the DM no matter what you do to me. Today the Lord General offered his support. Yesterday, the Lord Artisan. In exchange for the chance to kill me, you will promise to stop spreading lies. You leave me to do my work. Stop trying to turn the DM against me. You won't need to. If you kill me, then the DM will be yours anyway. And it might still be a legal profession.
So, you'll do the work to save the DM, and I'll be Lord Masteral once you fall in combat, which you will. You really are a fool. I just didn't credit how much.
Fool or not, the challenge requires a response.
I accept, Lord Masteral. On one condition. We fight before the council makes its decision, not after.
What is the difference?
That way, you'll never get instated as the real Lord Masteral. You will be forgotten. That is the only way I'll agree to fight you. Well?
If that's the only way to silence your lies, then so be it.
Kenton, no!
Eric found Kenton in the Lord Mastrel's rooms a few minutes later. Kenton was gazing from his balcony, while Aloran looked at him with obvious concern. Dirin poured drinks, and on seeing Eric, hurried to get another cup.
All right. What did you just do?
I challenged Dryal to a duel.
Your drinks, Lord Mastrel. Eric?
Thank you, Dirin. Just leave it there.
I heard the challenge. What does it mean?
It means that Dryal and Lord Kenton will fight to the death in the pit. It is an old tradition, one almost forgotten. Sandmasters haven't fought one another for centuries. So long, in fact, that the pit has become a conference room for the Mastrels. But once, long ago, even Sandmasters were more barbaric. Back then, the pit was a place where they were allowed to kill one another.
Kenton, can you defeat Dryal?
No, he will kill me.
Great Sandlord man, I'm supposed to be the insane one. What were you thinking?
That a DM with Dryal in charge is better than no DM, Eric. Your father is right. The DM keeps the Sandmasters in check. If Dryal were allowed to run off to the Rim Kingdoms, there is no telling the chaos he would cause. Someone had to stop him.
By committing suicide?
Dryal will make a horrible Lord Mastrel, but others will follow. Maybe the work I can do in these next few days will last through Dryal. If I change the DM's charter so Sandmasters will have to earn their keep, not even Dryal will be able to repeal it. Either way, it's the only thing I could think of.
Kenton, you are the most noble idiot I have ever known. It's suicide, plain and simple.
I've been selfish all my life, Eric. I always claimed I wanted to be a Mastrel. Well, maybe it's time I did something worthy of the title. Besides, who knows? Maybe I'll beat him.
Dryal can control 25 ribbons to your 3.
He'll overpower you in an instant.
I've been thinking about that. Perhaps there is a way to beat Dryal. Dirin, would you help in an experiment?
Me? Oh, of course, Lord Mastrel.
I need you to create a sand ribbon for me.
Dirin strode across the room to the sand vessel that stood by the door. He took a handful of sand and began to charge it.
Like this?
The boy, standing on the other side of his room from Kenton, raised his fist uncertainly, a look of concentration on his face. The sand clutched in his hand didn't flash to life in the way that Kenton's did. Instead, it slowly began to glow, like old coals being stoked to build a new flame. A wavering ribbon lurched out of Dirin's fist, glowing sickly as it moved through the air toward Kenton.
That's it. Let it flow from you. Good. You're doing well.
Diran nodded, his face already showing signs of fatigue.
Steady.
Kenton called his own sand to life. His glowing ribbon arced in the air for a moment, then snapped toward Diran's. As soon as the tip of Kenton's ribbon touched Diran's sand, Diran's ribbon fell stale, dropping to the floor.
Ah.
Kenton's ribbon remained glowing.
I'm sorry, Lord Mastrel. I couldn't maintain it once your ribbon touched.
It's all right. Now, you try me.
Lord Mastrel, I don't think I can.
Just try.
As you ask.
Diran reached down to pick up another handful of sand and called it to life.
I want you to bring your ribbon towards mine, Diran.
Diran's ribbon didn't whip forward. Instead, it meandered.
That's it. And strike!
Diran's ribbon reached Kenton's and touched it on the side. Kenton's sand immediately fell stale.
Oh!
Good.
But your ribbon collapsed.
Again, Diran.
As you command.
Now, strike directly on. Brace yourself.
The two raised ribbons and sent them toward one another. They struck head-on. Both fell stale.
They're both collapsing.
Yes. The trick is to hit your opponent's ribbon from the side. Power doesn't matter. If you touch another Sandmaster's ribbon with a tip of your own, then you can make it fall stale, disabling it.
That is why the Diem has rules against touching another Sandmaster's ribbons, Lord Mastrel. The tip of a ribbon contains the concentration of its energy. If it touches another ribbon, it interferes with that Sandmaster's control.
This is also why having more ribbons is such an advantage in combat. If you have enough ribbons to neutralize your opponents, you can deliver the killing blow.
It appears so, my lord.
So, it's obvious what I have to do.
Do enlighten us, O wise Lord Mastrel.
I just have to learn to master more ribbons.
Oh, of course.
A task not easily accomplished, Lord Mastrel. Many would call it impossible.
But it's not. We know that because I've done it once already. The problem is, we don't know how I did it. It doesn't make any sense. Why can I master three ribbons now? What did I do that changed my abilities?
I really don't know, my lord.
You died?
No, but I did overmaster. What if overmastering could make a Sandmaster stronger?
But it doesn't, my lord. Overmastery weakens a